Now, let me introduce our final keynote speaker for the conference. Some of you will know of Paul and the work he's done, but Paul manages director of the National Coordination Centre for Public Engagement. And I think Paul won't know this, but I'm sure you'll be aware of it. A lot of the debate that we've had over the last two days or so has been around how we can engage more and better with different kinds of folk, particularly around educational participation, but wider things as well. And I think the more I'm involved in this area of work, the more I feel I need to know about other things in order to improve and challenge my practice and what I do. So I think we're particularly pleased you could come and speak to us about the work that you're involved in to help us think maybe slightly differently about the strategies and ways that we could be involved in trying to reach out and engage with different constituencies in different ways. So over to you, Paul, and we look forward to what you've got to say. I think Paul's going to have a fairly interactive session, but we'll probably have some Q's and A's at the end as well. Thank you very much, and you're really welcome.
Thank you. It's lovely to be here. I hope this session's going to be useful to you. I think... So what do I do next? Yeah, wow, what an achievement. Yeah, I suppose for me it's always helpful to start just by tuning in a bit to who you are and what's in your head, particularly in regard to the subject I'm about to talk to you about. So I've got a few questions just to kick off. The first one for me is just to work out how many people here actually work in a university. You could put your hands up. So that's pretty much... gosh, two-thirds at least. And how many people work in the UK? Okay, and how many people have come from outside the UK? Gosh, okay, well, that's fantastic. This will be a very UK-centric presentation, I'm afraid. So those of you who work in universities, I'm really keen to know why. You know, what is it that really motivates you to work within a university? What is it that gets you out of bed in the morning in terms of your... kind of your values and your ambition, and why do you come into the university? I don't know whether anybody could share with me what it is that gets you out of bed in the morning. We were having a nice chat a minute ago. Yes. We talked in the same school in London many, many years ago. But in terms of why you're now at a university, why are you working in a university now, John? Does that resonate with lots of people? Yeah. It's that real sense of being able to make a difference. And I feel that. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about my background and how I've ended up doing what I do. But I guess there are probably things that are less than perfect in your university life, you know, in terms of the frustrations. I don't know whether anybody wants to share any of the things that get in the way. How long have we got? Yes. If you could speak quite loudly so everyone can hear. Anybody want to share something, you know, one of the key kind of things that really, not little things, but things that you think really are blocking you doing the kind of work you want to do? Yeah. Thank you. Yes. Anyone else who, yeah.
No, I think the major thing around
Yeah. Anybody got anything else? Yes. I think that some of those themes definitely will come up in the talk I'm going to give. I think the other question I wanted before I get much further is to just check how many people have heard of public engagement. Okay, so a small-ish number of people in the room. And those of you who have heard of it, how relevant do you think it is to your work? If I had to give you a scale of 1 to 10, and one is not relevant at all, and 10 is very relevant. Who would be over towards the 10? Okay, so that's about 4 or 5 people in the room. Okay, I've got some work to do, obviously. Public engagement, just public engagement, not the centre itself. So if I rephrase it, who's heard of public engagement? Right, well, that's more encouraging, although worrying for me. And of those, how many people feel it's very relevant to your work? Okay, well, that's better. That is better, I feel. I've got more to build on there. Okay, well, what I want to do is try and explore, hopefully for those who already know about it, what I say will ring true, but what is public engagement? And why is it a policy priority? I mean, there are many policy priorities, it's only one of many, but it is a policy priority. And I want to talk to you a bit about that. I want to talk a little bit about the project I'm involved in and current developments in the area. And I'm hoping that towards the end of the session, we can then have that conversation about how relevant it is to your work. So that's the plan. I thought I'd go back just to kick us off as to why I've kind of ended up where I am. And this takes me back 20 years. So hopefully you'll enjoy this. And this will bring back memories for some of you. That was the very wonderful Open University on the BBC, which 20 years ago was a feature of Saturday and Sunday mornings. If you turned on the television, there would be lots and lots of Open University programs, and through the night. And it was used as a delivery mechanism for teaching from the OU. And I was lucky enough to get a job, having trained as a teacher and worked in London for a while, I was lucky enough to get a job as a producer at the BBC at the Open University. And when I arrived, the kinds of programs that were being shown were like this.
And finally, how many digits of pi can you remember? Well, there are several mnemonics which can be used for remembering them. And the word lengths give the successive digits. For example, may I have a large container of coffee? But this one is really my favorite. How I want a drink. Alcoholic, of course. After all those formulas involving tangent functions.
Yes. So that, and these names, actually, this is rather sad for me, in a way, because these are people, all of those people I knew very well. They were the older generation when I arrived.
And finally, how many digits?
I know you'd love to watch that again. When I arrived, those were the elder, you know, the senior people at the Open University, and that was considered at the time to be kind of cutting edge practice. And I think it's kind of scary, actually, when you look at that, because that feels like from a bygone era. I don't feel that old, but when I look at it, I'm amazed to think that that was absolutely taken seriously as a really good way of using television to teach. It was effectively putting a lecture on the television. And I think I loved that work. I loved what the OU stood for, because it had the same qualities that I think for you are so important, which is about making a difference. And I think the OU's commitment to reaching out to all, you know, anybody who wanted to have a higher education was something I passionately believed in. And I also believe that the media played a really important part in that, because it enabled you to reach people at home and also to use innovative and creative ways of sharing knowledge. And I think when you look at where the OU has got to now, I feel I was sort of part of that journey. I mean, this is the OU on YouTube now, and they're putting lots and lots of rich content on their YouTube channel. And this is the OU on iTunes University. Millions and millions of people are using this material around the world. And for me, that's a natural progression, really, from where we started. But what's so fascinating, I think, is that idea of change, really, and how much education is changing. The world around universities in particular is changing, and I think when you look at it through the lens of the media, you perhaps see that change more profoundly than you do when you're sort of caught within the world of education, which feels often that it moves very, very slowly. So that sense of the world changing around the university, I think, is really interesting. So what I wanted to do is just remind you of where I've ended up. This is the National Coordinating Centre for Public Engagement. And I'll tell you more about what we do later, but I came back into the university sector about 3 years ago, having worked in the BBC for a long time. I came back because I actually thought this project in particular stood a real chance of making a difference. So I'm going to tell you why I thought that. I was, I guess, slightly naive at the time, thinking it would be as easy as all that, because it hasn't been easy at all. But anyway, I think this notion of education, higher education, and its place in society and what people want of universities is really, really important to think about. So what I'm going to do is show you just a few extracts from different media headlines, really, which I think bring alive some of the themes and issues in how universities need to respond to what the world wants of them. This is one example. This is Say No to Frankenstein Foods. This was the GM crops issue about, 10 years ago, where the work of researchers in universities caused real concern in wider society. And there was a really well-orchestrated campaign to say no to the research that was going on. And that effectively created a crisis for that aspect of university research. And it's a crisis of trust, people. People didn't trust what was going on in the universities. They didn't trust the direction the research was going in. I think more recently we've seen with things like the ClimateGate scandal at UEA, again, that sense of researchers perhaps appearing to be squirreled away, doing things not in a transparent and open way. So real issues around trust, and can people who work in universities be trusted? This is one of my favorites. This is an issue really around accountability. This is a piece of very valuable research into, I don't know how to put this politely, it's to do with the way that penguins expel fecal matter. And somebody has spent a long time calculating the various variables involved. So that is the position of a model penguin during defecation and physical parameters used to calculate rectal pressure necessary to expel fecal matter over a distance of 40 centimetres. Now, you could ask, why? You could ask why, couldn't you? And people often do ask, why are some of the areas of research going ahead in universities, and why am I paying for them? Because this is public money. So I think they're really valid questions around accountability. And I'm sure the researcher who was doing that work could come up with a good account of it, but they need to, frankly, because without that account being made, I think it's very easy for people to say, why do we put money into university research when we could be paying for another hospital bed, etc. So I think you really, you know, we need to take those concerns seriously. You know, I think then there are, and this picks up on a point somebody made earlier about what is university for, and is it about turning out graduates who are just very employable? Is it about a very instrumental view of higher education? And this is a quote where somebody was saying that effectively students come out of university and they're absolutely useless as far as employers are concerned. So that question of what is the point of university, what should the focus be, should it be on learning instrumental practical skills, what is the value of personal development and of those other kinds of qualities that we probably all believe are important. So questions about the purpose and the values of university, and a lot of pressure to say universities should become much more instrumental. So again, there's a real need on universities to be able to make the case for what they think is important. Again, issues around the tuition fees, what impact is that going to have? Is it going to turn students much more into consumers who treat the university as a transaction, they're a customer, or are they a member of a learning community? How do we navigate those waters? Very complex questions. This is an example of the debate within academia around the issue of impact. 18,000 academics signed a petition saying they really didn't want the impact arrangements to go ahead as they were proposed in the new research excellence framework. They felt that they would significantly damage the ways in which research get done in universities. And I was at a conference yesterday where a speaker said he found it extraordinary, and he sits on one of these new research excellence framework panels, and he's from outside the sector. He said, is it so awful that 1 in 10 researchers are going to be expected to talk about how their research was of value to somebody outside the university? How is it that that is such a huge issue for so many people within universities? You know, so I think, again, a real sense of polarization at the moment about what's going on within the sector. And then this is just another interesting insight. This was a poll that Universities UK did last year, which discovered that less than 1 in 5 people recognize the wider impacts universities have in society. The real sense that the work, perhaps, that many of us in this room care about is very little understood and appreciated by people outside the sector. So I think there's a real sense that universities have got a whole set of challenges around communicating better and talking more about what they do, why they do it, how they do it, and having more of a dialogue with the world outside the university, because there's a huge amount of increasing pressure and scrutiny on the money that gets spent on what we all do. So I think that that helps explain why this idea of public engagement has become a very important policy objective for government, frankly, and for the funders of higher education, and why they chose to fund the centre that I'm working in. But before I talk about the university sector, I just wanted to step outside the university sector for a minute and look at public engagement as a kind of big idea that's sweeping through other areas of society. So when my project was set up, the Labour government was in power, and this is an example of some of the policy initiatives they developed. Choosing Health was their health strategy. Tony Blair, we're clear that government cannot and should not pretend it can make the population healthy. The most successful approaches to improving health and tackling health inequalities are based on the effective engagement of communities. So there was a real sense that engagement, rather than a kind of more authoritarian and more sort of top-down model of government and of policy, was really important. This was the Communities in Control, another piece of Labour legislation. New independent assessments of services are being introduced from April 2009 and will include evaluation of the quality of public engagement. So, and they actually came up with a duty to involve the public in the development of services and policies at a local and regional level. So then we had a change, and we have the coalition government, and they have dismantled a number of things, obviously, that the Labour government had in place. But interestingly, this notion that a relationship with the public is really important has survived. And you'll be familiar with this rhetoric, and I suspect you probably talked about it on the last 2 days. The government believes it's time for a fundamental shift of power from Westminster to people. We will promote decentralisation and engagement, and we will end the era of top-down government, etc. So really, it's still carrying forward is this idea that engaging with the public and not being a kind of a cut-off and separate organisation is really important. Science and Society, David Willetts, Universities and Science Minister. Again, he's very much taken forward this idea that engaging the public in science is crucial. So people want more information and to engage with it in ways that's relevant for them. I'm committed to supporting excellent ways to engage the public with science. And here we go, the Big Society. I couldn't go through this without talking about the Big Society. This is David Cameron talking about encouraging, agitating for community engagement and social renewal. So why is it that this notion of engagement has become such a familiar notion that has survived through Labour into the coalition? Well, this is one way of explaining it. This is the Cabinet Office, a very elaborate little chart that shows what's happened since the 1940s. Through to the 1980s, through to the present. And if you look over on the right-hand side, I guess what they're identifying is a set of pressures, economic crisis, complex system-wide problems, new technologies, diverse social structures, increasing public expectations. A real sense that the relationships that perhaps were more contained within, you have universities, you have government departments, you have local government, it decides what needs to be done, it does it, and the public just come along for the ride. Actually, those old ways of working are no longer effective. You need a much more dynamic relationship. There's much less respect for authority, there's much more expectation from people that they will have a say in what happens. And so you have to respond to that energy and find ways of capturing it. So I think that's the underpinning notion behind public engagement. I have a really crude diagram to try and explain this. So if you have the idea of the university and you have the idea of the public, I think an old-fashioned way of looking at it, you could perhaps almost say, is public relations, where you do things, you decide what you need to do, and then you tell people what you do, you tell people why what you do is important, you tell them why they should be grateful, you tell them why they should trust you. And I think that way of approaching the public has proved not to be particularly successful in this changing context. So public engagement, the way I make sense of it, is much more a sense that it's a two-way relationship between the university and the public. And there's a sense of actually working with and listening to as much as there is the case of communicating at people. So that's a really crude and simplistic approach to explaining where I think public engagement has come from and why it matters. And I think that was the kind of external context which led Hefke to themselves absorb the language of public engagement. So listening to and involving the public is fundamentally important to the work of higher education. This was David Eastwood, the previous chief executive Hefke. Universities have never been more outward-looking or more aware of their wider responsibilities to engage across a range of issues. So this was Alan Thorpe. He's the chief exec of the research councils. And he's talking about engagement as an important word. And we believe that a closer relationship with higher education helps empower people to take an informed part in the democratic process and the decisions affecting their lives. So I hope that is a relatively comprehensible and very quick kind of setting of the scene. I don't know whether anybody's got any questions at this point, because what I'll do in a minute is then talk about, well, what have we been doing with these ideas in terms of the Centre for Public Engagement. But I wondered if anybody had any questions or comments at this point. Yeah, could you speak nice and loud, because thank you. I think, I guess the way I see the difference is that I think Labour much better understood how much investment you need to make in creating the conditions in which engagement can happen. Whereas the coalition seemed to think that just by coming up with the rhetoric, you can somehow inspire things to change. And I think all of us who worked in education realize how much time and energy and effort you need to put in to building relationships with people and for empowerment to happen. So I think the Tories and the coalition significantly underestimate the actual underpinnings that are required, but they've taken the kind of overarching grand narrative. So I think that to me feels like the difference. I don't know whether that makes sense to you. Yeah. Any other comments? Yeah.
Ham from the University of Melbourne. We've had the most senior bureaucrats in the land recently berating universities for their lack of engagement or relevance. And I think that the problem is that we expect that there's a direct line from research to policy, but there's not. There's actually an intervening process which is the translation of research findings into policy implications. And I think that if that's left out, then we will continue to be berated when in actual fact the problem is that process of translation.
Yeah.
I just wonder what you think.
Yeah, I think we've had the same sort of problem, which was, I think the word impact is perhaps part of the problem, because what impact implies is it's like research is a magic bullet that the researcher does and then fires off into society and change happens. So that's why we've always and consistently argued for the notion of engagement, whether that's engaging with policymakers or with communities or with people in civil society, community organisations, whatever. You don't achieve impact just by telling people that you've got some great research that's relevant to them. You actually have to work with them on setting that research agenda, involving them in that process, so they really own the outcomes of the work. So I think we've seen a really useful shift in this country in relation to the research councils, because they've introduced this notion of pathways to impact, which is this idea of engagement, frankly, which is what steps are you going to put in place to involve the potential users of your research. And they're not saying that you can ever predetermine what the output and the impact will be, but they want you to make sure you are building relationships with people from which impact should follow. I think, you know, it's a very good point. Any other questions or observations? Yeah.
It seems to me there's maybe a bit of a disjoint between how we measure things within a university setting and what we value, particularly within the UK, thinking of the research assessment exercise and now the REF, where perhaps an article in a top-rated journal that six people in the world read is, I'm exaggerating here perhaps, but, you know, it's rated more than something that is used in a practical level on the ground that actually makes an immediate difference.
Yeah.
And I think that's a kind of almost running separate to the public engagement strand, is how we measure and value things within the system.
I think the system will never lose its genuine commitment to top-rated journals. The research community, that's still really important within the new research excellence framework. I think what's interesting, though, is that there is much more room now for other kinds of activity. Nothing like as much as there is for the other, but if you look at the impact side of it, it's possible to make a case study that will be graded very highly, which does not have underpinning it research that's been published in a in a top-rated journal. You can actually put grey literature in as the underpinning research, as long as it's of a reputable standard. If you have then a really powerful and convincing narrative about the difference that that work made, then that will be an excellent example of impact and will be rated very highly. So it's one aspect of a bigger system, but it's one that at least is an opportunity, so I think one should be grateful for that. Any other thoughts, comments? Hello, Mary.
Hi, I'm one of those who would have said public engagement isn't something that impacts much on what they do. The rhetoric that has impacted a lot is employer engagement.
Yes.
And I'm just intrigued about whether you see that as a subsection of this or a different agenda altogether.
Okay, brilliant, thank you. That gives me the cue to move on. Thank you. Okay, I'll come on to it. If you bear with me, just give me a couple of minutes and I'll get to that. So we were set up, we were called the Beacons for Public Engagement. We were meant to shine light far and wide. But interestingly, it was a project that was set up with culture change at its heart. Rather than doing lots and lots of examples of good public engagement, it was much more looking at the university culture and ethos and organization and strategy and seeing how could public engagement become embedded within it. And there were six different beacons set up. There's one in Edinburgh with Napier and Heriot Watt and other Scottish universities involved, one at Newcastle and Durham, one in Manchester, one in UEA, one in London, one in Cardiff, and there's the National Centre in Bristol that I'm part of. So what is public engagement and how does it sit alongside other kinds of engagement, which was exactly the question. And that was one of the first things we had to try and get some kind of grip on, because frankly, people talk about public engagement, they talk about community engagement, they talk about civic engagement, they talk about employer engagement. And this diagram proved to be really valuable, but it's something it took us a little while to generate. But I don't even know whether you can see it, so I don't know how valuable it is to you. But in the middle is the idea of the university, and then around the university are a range of different stakeholders or different types of public. And at the top, you could talk about the general public. You could talk about communities of place or communities of interest. Moving around to the right-hand side, you could talk about relationships with civil society, with community organizations and voluntary organizations. Moving around the bottom, you can talk about business and enterprise, social enterprises, businesses. And then moving around, you can also talk about the public sector. And you can talk about relationships with regional and national government, health and well-being agencies, cultural and leisure services, etc. What we found was a lot of people were quite resistant to thinking about the university in this way, and our funders were as well. Hefke kept sort of telling me to stop talking about business engagement. You know, that they fund that through something else. That happens over there. You know, we do community engagement. We've funded a project called Southeast Coastal Communities. That's done there. You're public engagement. So you just talk about the bit at the top. And you know, our argument back was to say, well, actually, if you want a university to really get to grips with and to become much more strategic in its relationships with the outside world, it needs to think about them as a whole and not as them as a set of individual boxes. And I think what was interesting then was the discussions we could have with senior managers in universities, which was to say, don't think about all of these things as little silos. Don't think about your outreach and your volunteering as one little bit, and then you've got your business engagers over here, and then you've got your public engagers over here. Think as a whole about your strategy for engaging locally, regionally, globally, and how all of these different relationships with the world outside the university can work together to your advantage. And I think that argument is slowly becoming much, much more convincing to people. And obviously it's one I think that's really relevant to people in this room, because I think the role that you play in terms of that outreach relationship and the skills you have in building relationships with people outside the university and building relationships that are much more equal and mutual are of incredible value to a university that is trying to think much more strategically about its partnerships. So I think my answer to your question is that these things actually should be thought of as a whole. The problem is, it's all very well to say that, but the practice of achieving that is really, really difficult. So I just thought I'd spend a few minutes rattling through some of the lessons that we've learned. One of the other things, as well as trying to think about your different public groups in a kind of joined up and thoughtful way, is actually universities often break their own internal systems down and have a box that's their research people, and then they've got their teaching and learning over here, they've got their knowledge exchange over there, and then they've got their kind of social responsibility over here. So another thing that we've been really trying to encourage universities to do is to actually think about all of the ways in which engagement enriches those four areas, and to think about how, as a university, they can actually put some strategy behind how they all work together. So typically, some universities are now creating a post for a Pro Vice Chancellor for Engagement, who has a kind of a portfolio that involves thinking across those four areas. Others, like at the University of Bristol, have created what they call an Engaged University Steering Group. And sitting on that group, they have people from outreach, from widening participation, from volunteering, from the research development unit, from teaching and learning. They have heads of faculty who come. They have representatives from the student body as well, which allows them to meet periodically. They have a strategy for how they're going to try and make these different areas of the university work together. And that's proving to be very successful. So I think those are the sorts of models that have real power and could be, again, of, I think you're exactly the kind of people who should be involved in those strategic conversations. And the work that you do, rather than being marginalized and seen as part of the past, I think is very much part of the future. Easy to say. The Beacons for Public Engagement, I think, was set up because it was recognized that actually thinking in this way and changing the culture of universities to work in this way is not remotely easy. There are so many vested interests in working in different ways and of having silos and of having research as a particularly sort of powerful entity within the university that actually to break those down is very difficult. This will just give you a flavor of what some of the Beacons have discovered. This was UEA, and when they did a survey 3 years ago looking at, well, what is the kind of support for public engagement within the university, what they discovered were a number of quite sort of serious issues. The first one was 84% of the staff that they surveyed were involved in some kind of engagement, but nobody kind of had a shared understanding of what that was. And so they've actually worked very hard within UEA to come up with a kind of typology that makes sense of engagement within UEA. And they've done that by bringing different people together with a stake in it. And they've come up with a definition that works for them. They discovered a real lack of strategic support. So the new UEA corporate plan has engagement as a strategic priority. And that's helped because it's given some focus to what they're trying to achieve. They discovered there was very little recording of any of this activity. And that's become a real issue for many universities now as they think about the impact agenda. How do you make sure you're monitoring and recording the interactions you're having around your research? So they developed a tracker. They discovered, and this is an absolutely critical issue, a fundamental lack of reward and recognition for it. And so they developed their promotions criteria, their recruitment, their job descriptions now allow for the importance of engagement. And they discovered also that the evaluation was minimal, so they put quite a lot of support in to help staff to evaluate it. And so from that, we've managed to build, I think, a lot of really useful resources to help people, if they are interested in getting a grip on this subject, to take that work forward. And we've also developed a manifesto for public engagement, because our idea is that if you can get the senior managers in the university to actually take this as a real priority, then that will really help others who are committed to it to make it happen. So we invite universities to sign up to that, and then we work with them in terms of developing their strategy and their practice. So we've got loads of resources on our website, which we'd love to share with you, etc. I could obviously talk for another 3 hours. And I'd get nowhere near telling you everything I want to tell you. But I'm going to stop because clearly time is very, very tight and we've got a few minutes maybe just for any final comments. But I guess the key thing is I wanted to come just so that you knew who we were. And if you're interested in the kinds of things I've been talking about, please do get in touch.
Thank you. I'm sure you agree that there's so much in common in terms of the analysis that Paul's offering here. I mean, I can relate listening to all those things in terms of the kind of outreach strategies that we use and so on. And I really want to echo what I think Paul was saying to us, which was how central the skill set and the knowledge base we have is to this debate about public engagement. I think you put it that we're not on the margins of that, actually. You know, our collective knowledge in these areas are critical to universities making any meaningful progress on this agenda. And I think we can shape and share that practice in ways, both in our institutions and through the work that FACE does. Anyway, thank you for your presentation. We've got about 5 minutes or so for some questions and comments. Jane, do you want to start? The microphone will come down to you. You say who you are and where you're from.
Thank you. I'm Jane Clapton. I'm from Brisbane, Australia. My question is around this whole area and how it creates one of the great mysteries of life for me. I understand this, and I think they're really important activities, and I work in a school of human services and social work, so service and engagement is our disciplinary area, and we probably lead universities, some of the activities around that and participation and so on. However, the mystery of life for me is that one of the difficulty is in terms of our graduates, the university graduates' perception of universities themselves, is how on earth has the great us and them culture been established? And why is it that we keep hearing comments about how, you know, academics in glass castles, why we've got to get out into the real world, blah-de-blah-de-blah-de, when in fact many of the people who are making these comments have been at university, they understand, they've had the experience, and yet in the workforce they're quite antagonistic to the university experience. So in all of these strategies, what strategies do we need to put in place that the students have a better understanding of the place of universities in their professional life?
I think that's a conference answer. You know, you need a conference really to, because there's so many aspects to that. But we sought extra funding so that we could try and bring the student voice into our project, and I think discovered that there's a huge appetite for students for a socially engaged education. They don't want employability rammed down their throats. They obviously want to come out of university prepared and capable, but they want an education that really stretches them. There's fantastic evidence to support that. We're working closely with the National Union of Students, who at the moment see us at a kind of fork in the road in terms of how universities build a stronger, either a consumer-customer relationship with their students or a partnership relationship, and they've done a lot of thinking about that. But I think the problem is that universities often create this very... They have in the past created a really instrumental relationship with their alumni as well. So not only when you're at university do you not feel particularly part of that community, but once you've left you start getting all these bloody emails asking you for money, you know. And it's like, it's just, it puts you in a place. Whereas if I compare, say I'm a member of an organization like the National Trust, because I kind of believe in heritage and conservation, and I feel part of that organization. And they've worked really hard to build a relationship with me. And they do ask me for money, and I don't give them any. But, you know, I don't feel so put upon. And I actually feel, you know, I feel really proud of what they're doing to make the world... You know. The internal strategies. Well, I think that's interesting. I mean, I've seen a huge shift, say, at the University of Bristol since I started working with them. As to involving students as part of the strategic process, actually. So they, and I was talking to the Vice Chancellor at the University of Lincoln yesterday, who now has put the President of the National Union, of the Student Union, on her executive group. You know, so that's the kind of work you need to do. Take their voice really seriously, not in a tokenistic way.
We know Mary very well.
Do you?
Yes. Okay, next question. Wait till the mic comes over.
Thanks. Kylie Hagedine, Kew University, Head of Wine Participation and Outreach. First of all, thank you for my conference Eureka moment, because I have in fact been put in charge of a very strange committee that at the moment is termed this sort of outreach committee, and I've been approaching the international office and the research groups at the university to say, okay, come on, we want to try and get a strategy and a policy and a structure around how we do this outreach, and they keep going, well, we don't do widening participation, and I'm saying, no, it's outreach. And what you've given me here is a language that I think they will relate to much more, which in my little box back at the university, I don't think I'd really sparked on, and this has really helped. So this whole idea of engagement and public engagement, I think, is key to moving that forward. And I think I just wanted to echo your point that I think it's right. We've been doing a lot of work with communities, and we've been quite innovative in our practice. We've not always engaged with just young people or schools and colleges, but with the local community. In the summer, we're going out to the Green Man Festival, which is a great 3 or 4 days in the field, but promoting some of our science mentoring work there and linking it to sustainability and public and those sorts of things. So there are some really interesting innovative practices that can come together through that. And so really, I just wanted to echo your point that I think universities do need to think about this at a strategic level and use the expertise of people like ourselves in the room. So thank you for the sort of language you recommended to me.
Thank you. I think language is key, actually. And that, you know, that sense is if you understand what the policy drivers are and this new kind of framing, it's a huge opportunity for you to get in there. And you have the kinds of skills and experience that universities desperately need at the moment. So rather than feeling like you're on the fringes, I think you should be moving much more into the centre.
I think if it's quick, Andrew, because I'm conscious of time, really quick question and then a quick response if need be. Yeah, comment. Okay, thank you.
Your slide of the four kind of the main areas of public engagement.
Yeah.
It would be nice to have a fifth area that's maybe outreach, admissions, marketing, that whole area of a university engagement, which is kind of one we're all involved in. Help us.
Thank you. Sorry, you want to...
Now I think the joy of it, I mean, all of these things are for you, you know, for people to adapt, frankly, and universities are constantly take them and change them. So I think it's a starting point for a conversation. But as you take it into your university, I would envisage it changing a lot.
Okay, thank you.
I will be around until lunchtime.
Fine. So. And not only that, Paul will also join us for the kind of plenary session, the kind of mop-up session at the end. With Lisa and Mike as well, Mike Osborne, so there'll be a chance for more conversation there. I just wanted to say, on Kylie's point, it's such a good one, because we're in transition, we're adapting to a new policy environment, both big site and within our different institutions. So the excellent point you make connecting with Paul's contribution is a really important one for us to hear, because we need to adapt our language, our discourses, to ensure that we have the opportunity to put before universities, policymakers and so on, the work that we know how to do. But we need the language to do that. And I think this has been really helpful from that respect. So can we thank Paul again, and then off to final paper session. Thank you, Paul.